from KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, for years there was protest and criticism over the logging practices of Houston-based Maxim Corporation, the owner of Pacific Lumber. With new ownership in place, we'll consider what the changes are apt to mean for old growth policies and for clear cutting. A panel will be joining us, and we'll take your calls and emails coming up after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. Last week, the transition took place that represents the full takeover of Pacific Lumber by the San Francisco-based Fisher family, founders of The Gap. For over two decades, Houston-based Maxim and its owner Charles Hurwitz, the company that ran the 145-year-old Humboldt County business, came under fire and protest, including lawsuits over logging operations and environmentalist Julia Butterfly spending 2 years in protest living in an old redwood tree called Luna. In 1999, the Headwaters Forest Agreement took place with the sale of 7,500 acres of old-growth redwood groves that led to the creation of the Headwater Forest Preserves of Eureka. Now that the Mendocino Redwood Company is in charge and the Fishers of local Gap fame are owners, we focus our attention on what is in store for the 210,000 acres of timberland, the sawmill, and the town. Let me tell you who's joining us for this hour. We want to welcome here in studio Sandy Dean, who chairs the Mendocino Redwood Company and Humboldt Redwood Company, company owned by founder of The Gap, and which last week took over Pacific Lumber. Good morning to you.
Thank you for having me.
Congratulations, I guess, are in order.
Last week was a good week.
Let me also tell you who's joining us. David Simpson is with us from up in Petrolia, that's in the Lost Coast. He's project coordinator of the Community Forestry Team. It's a Humboldt County-based coalition of local timber industry representatives, economic development advocates, and environmentalists, which promotes timberland preservation and community forestry practices. And David Simpson, glad to have you aboard. Good morning.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And also with us this morning is Scott Greeson, and he's in Arcata. He's executive director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. They're a nonprofit. And they work to protect and restore forests, watersheds, coastal estuaries, and native species in Northwest California. And welcome.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. And it's Arcata. I always want to say Arcata, my Tom Stoppard influence. Let me begin, Sandy Dean, with you. And let's begin by just sort of letting our listeners know what's happened here. Because, I guess, first of all, the Fisher family got involved, what, about a decade ago?
10 years ago, we formed Mendocino Redwood Company, which was created with 230,000 acres of mostly redwood timberlands in Mendocino County. It had a sawmill, a distribution business, and so on as well. And when we started Mendocino Redwood Company 10 years ago, you know, we started with a public purpose that we put out, and we said we wanted to balance being good stewards of the land with being a successful business. And we set about doing that. I think, you know, now we can look back and see, you know, what some of those policies have done, and we hope that we can duplicate that up at the newly formed Humboldt Redwood Company.
There was some controversy for a while after you, I mean, particularly with clear cutting. Right?
When we started, you know, we had very good intentions, and we knew that we were going to make dramatic changes to how Louisiana Pacific had operated their timberlands. They had used a very traditional industrial approach, but changing forest policy is the kind of thing that takes a little while to figure out what you're going to do and then to actually implement it and get it done on the ground. So it took us almost 2 years to become Forest Stewardship Council certified in our practices. And in becoming certified by the Forest Stewardship Council, we eliminated traditional clear cutting. We adopted an old growth policy. We lowered the rate of harvest. We made a commitment to restoration investment on the property. All those were things that we knew we would do from day one, but it took a while to get them done.
Forest Stewardship Council advocates sustainable forestry, and this is really now a part of, well, it was a part of your reorganization plan, which was approved by state officials and environmentalists, although there were some bondholders that weren't too happy, right?
Right. So in the bankruptcy process for Pacific Lumber Company, there were a lot of players. There were creditors of both Pacific Lumber Company and a subsidiary, Scotia Pacific. There was the state. There were unsecured creditors. There were regulators, both federal and state. In the end, all of the stakeholders, lined up in favor of our plan of reorganization, with the exception of the bondholders for Scotia Pacific.
And now, that objection was overruled, essentially.
In a somewhat long and drawn-out court process, federal bankruptcy judge Richard Schmidt, who's in Corpus Christi, Texas, approved our plan of reorganization, which is a comprehensive plan that pays the creditors full and fair value and also adopts a business plan to make the Scotia sawmill, the sawmill in Scotia, successful, to bring our forest policies to the timberlands that were formerly owned by Pacific Lumber Company, and to have a business model that will be successful enough that we hope will preserve the way of life for the town of Scotia.
What happens to the workers in this whole plan of yours?
Well, there were about 350 folks who were employed by Pacific Lumber Company and its subsidiary operating the timberlands. And although it gets a little bit complicated, about 300 of those folks are either in the process or have been hired, and that'll get sorted out in the balance of this week.
And that includes benefits and...
Yeah, actually,
expect is a kind of compensation that they were used to.
Yeah, so benefits will improve a little bit, and this is really just we've adopted the benefits that we've used at Mendocino Redwood Company, and it turns out that there were things about our benefits that were a little bit better for the workers than what they had. The pay rates will change, and we really have a philosophy of paying market pay rates. And when we got in and studied the compensation that folks had, we found that there were some folks who were paid more than market, some less, some the same, and we're working to adjust all that to make that as fair and objective as possible.
We're talking to Sandy Dean, who's here with us in studio, who's chairman of the Mendocino Redwood Company and Humboldt Redwood Company, and you're talking about this is still a business, despite all these fine notions of ecology and sustainability, and you're planning to harvest about 50 million board feet a year?
So when we put out our business plan dating back to February as part of the bankruptcy process, which was a long process, We wanted to let people know with as much detail as we could how we would operate the timberlands, and we committed at that time to a harvest rate on the timberlands of about 55 million feet expected for the first decade. And that number compares to what Pacific Lumber Company would have harvested of 74 million feet last year, 99 million feet the year before, and 150 or 160 for the prior 6 years before that.
And again, Sandy Dean chairs the Mendocino Redwood Company and Humboldt Redwood Company. David Simpson is project coordinator of the community forestry team. And David Simpson, I think you're on record as saying this is the best deal you could have gotten. You think there's integrity to the deal and it's satisfactory in terms of management and harvesting. But you have also expressed some concern over opposition to conversation easements?
That's a fact. Let me begin by saying that I was part of a consortium of organizations that was a competitor for these lands. We were the community element in it. We were joined with the Nature Conservancy and Save the Redwoods League, and we were attempting to field our own offer. All that being said, Mendocino Redwood Company proposed an excellent plan. Our conservation perspective was more than matched by their commitment to cut 55 million board feet a year for the first 10 years. It's a real good start. The elements were there. So we had to see this as a benefit to Humboldt County, and we owe a debt of gratitude for Mendocino Redwood Company for freeing us from the grip of the former owner, the unhappy grip of the former owner. All that being said, conservation easements are something that we work with, and we had hoped that Mendocino Redwood Company could see the value in them. They do have a commitment, a long-term commitment to sustainability that's proven at least to sustain itself over the last 10 years. There still is this issue, though, of the future of our community and how we protect ourselves from having to go through another massive bump on the road like we just went through over the last 23 years. Mendocino Redwood Company promises to be a different sort of owner, a different sort of manager, and we're glad of that. We would like to we hope that these lands that they're operating on stay in the practice of ecologically sound forestry on into the future, indefinitely into the future.
Well, you're heartened by the fact that this is intergenerational. You've got the Fisher family involved and generations ongoing there. But give us a little sense of your concern about conservation easements. You might even define what they are for our listeners who maybe don't know.
Well, a conservation easement is a when a landowner gives up rights to practice to certain kinds of practices or certain kinds of uses or certain buyers, potential sales of their property that have conservation benefits that can be calculated, that can be monetized. Conservation forces, including and especially the state of California, can offer them payment for the giving over of those rights if they promise to provide benefits to the people of the state of California through conservation of critical resources. So that, for instance, a rancher that has 1,000 acres of land and the surrounding community supports the notion of open space and sees this as the best alternative as opposed to some kind of intensive development for homes, gives up that right. He gives up the right to ever develop that land. He can sell it, but it has to be sold to another ranch family that's going to keep it intact. He can sell that easement to the state of California, perhaps to a land trust for a significant part of the value that he's giving up. So it is a landowner's giving up a value that for conservation purposes that can be paid for from conservation monies often organized by the state. I hope I've been clear.
Yeah, you have. And David Simpson, again, is project coordinator of Community Forestry Team. They're based in Humboldt County. Do you think, David Simpson, that, let me go back to what I asked Sandy Dean earlier. That is what he is on the record as saying was a big mistake initially of clear-cutting of Mendocino Redwood or by Mendocino Redwood. And all is forgiven on that score? You're convinced that things are going to move forward in a positive way?
I think so. I mean, they're set up to do that. I mean, there's still, you know, there is a certain level of trust, but after 23 years of massive distrust and the painful dislocation that accrues from that and the conflict, you know, within our own community, trust is not something that's going to be granted entirely and immediately. We've got a good start and a solid basis. But I think probably that, you know, there's going to have to be that the elements of the trust are going to have to be verified in one way or another through whatever set of agreements that we can all reach with the company. Some of it will take place over years. We're all hoping very much that this works out as it's seeming to at this stage of the game. But again, you know, the concept of verifiable trust is one that I think is workable here.
You would have liked some community ownership, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, our druthers would have been some element of community ownership, and we still believe that. We still believe that ultimately the community is the ownership by the community of critical resource lands provides the best possible outcome in the long term, both ecologically and socially and economically. Be that as it may, we would operate, were we to have prevailed and ended up in an ownership position, we would be operating under the same financial constraints that they would. We would have to produce, we would have to commit ourselves to pay back debt. We'd have to produce revenues from the sale of forest products to pay back debt. So our position wouldn't be any the same, you know, wouldn't be any different. It's the ultimate outcome that would be different. In the long run, we would be benefiting, you know, the values of this property, of these properties, and the revenues that occurred would return to the community as opposed to a private entity.
David Simpson again with us from Petrolia up in the Lost Coast, project coordinator for the Community Forestry Team. And they're again a Humboldt County-based coalition of local timber industry representatives, economic development advocates, and environmentalists promoting timberland preservation and community forestry practices. We're also joined this morning by Scott Greeson, who is once again, with us this morning by phone, Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center, a nonprofit which works to protect and restore forests and watersheds, as well as coastal estuaries and native species in Northwest California. And EPIC is behind this, Scott. I mean, there was concern on your part, perhaps as well, but you're behind head and shoulders now?
Well, I think that, you know, the situation here is complicated in a lot of different ways, logistically, emotionally, intellectually. But the relief that I think conservationists feel on the North Coast at Hurwitz's exit from the scene is significantly tempered by grief and an awareness that what we've got now is good, it's better. Whether it's good enough is a whole nother question. and something that we'll be moving on to in, you know, the days to come.
Forgive me, how do you define what's good enough?
Well, that is the huge question that faces us all now. And I think, you know, the idea you raised of sustainable forestry, I think, kind of gets to the heart of it. I think we need to stop talking, frankly, about sustainable forestry. We need to start talking about restoration forestry, because the issue now is not can we continue current practices as have been established over the last few generations, but what is it going to take to actually restore species, protect ecosystem functions, and do that in a way that actually protects both human and natural communities over the long run.
Well, I looked at the document that EPIC put out, and it's pretty extensive in terms of maybe how to measure, how to find the touchstones to what indeed is good. It talks a lot about sound environmental principles and silviculture practices, but it also talks about the role of harvesting and wildlife and old growth and riparian roads and independent review. I mean, these are the kinds of things that you're expecting, hoping, anticipating? What?
Several different layers. Again, there's stuff that we see in the commitments that Mendocino Redwood Company has already made that are going to be significant improvements over the practices that have been routine for Pacific lumber, that are really pretty good. There's some commitments. There's some elements of what we understand to be MRC's new practices, which we think can and should be improved. We'd point to the idea of clear cutting. Sandy spoke again about avoiding traditional clear cutting. We'd like to remove that qualifier. We'd like to see the property brought into selection management. We see commercially viable selection practices in operation today in the Santa Cruz area. Those are workable standards there. Why can't we do it here? And there's other things that it's pretty clear that we're going to have to agree to disagree about. The Mendocino Redwood Company is pretty proud of its use of herbicides. We're not very happy about that.
Where do you see opposition, though, at this point? Or is there opposition, really, to the company?
Two different questions. Opposition to the establishment of Humboldt Redwoods Company, there's very little. The significant opposition that came was from Red Emerson, the head of Sierra Pacific Industries, who wanted to, I think, keep operating in the same vein as Charles Hurwitz. Opposition to continued, I think, unsustainable operations is something you're going to find widespread on the North Coast.
Sandy Dean, can you address concerns about herbicide use and clear-cutting as a practice, perhaps going full throttle as opposed to maybe modification of it?
Sure, and I think first, you know, we owe gratitude to a lot of people in the process. I think we were successful in court in part because we had so many folks who were willing to take a chance and stand up and be willing to be for something, to be for the chance to be able to have a timber business that would manage sustainably and be a, you know, an important and respectful member of the community. And amongst those folks, you know, David Simpson was helpful to us, and so was Scott and his organization, and we thank them for that. Forestry, when you get down to talking about some of these specifics, can get fairly nuanced about what is the best path to get to, I think, a shared long-term goal of a healthy forest managed in a sustainable way. If we want to talk about what do we think long-term sustainability for Humboldt Redwood Company will look like, the place to start really is to go back and look at what have we done at Mendocino Redwood Company, where we have 10 years of experience now. And hey, we've made mistakes along the way, but we think we have a reasonably good set of policies that, taken as a whole, are really balancing managing the forest with a high standard of stewardship, which for us started off really being the simple concept of leave it better than you found it, and has really evolved to restoration forestry. How do we make the forest healthier over time? Balancing those stewardship objectives with also making sure that we can be successful as a business and therefore sustain ourselves in these practices for the long term. On herbicides in particular, at Mendocino Redwood Company, we have a policy of using them for the purpose of trying to finish the need for them. So our Redwood Timberlands in Mendocino County have a long history of very tough industrial management in a very short-sighted way. A byproduct of that is a legacy of large amounts of timberlands that have would historically have been dominated by redwood and Douglas fir conifer trees that has substantial amounts of tan oak on it. Tan oak is a fine tree. It's a native tree. It belongs in the redwood forest, but it's it should be an understory species in small amounts. We do use herbicides to work to reduce the amount of tan oak on our timberlands so that we can bring back redwood and Douglas fir trees in stands in our lifetime where they would have been present before the harsh industrial practices of the last 100-plus years.
David Simpson appears to be a very strong commitment from San Ynadena Company where sustainability is concerned. Of course, when the profit motive becomes apparent, some think that there may be indeed some real tensions there. How do you see that?
Well, there's going to be tensions where another. You have to recognize that these guys are coming in on top of 23 years of massive overcutting. So there are areas that have been in their holdings that have been significantly damaged, eroded, and people living in these drainages who are fearful of almost any further timber harvest, and so their fears are going to have to be allayed. Like I say, the target that Mendocino Redwood Company has developed of 55 million board feet a year for the first decade is an excellent goal to start with and should be workable. It's in the specific drainages in the watershed-specific locales where they could run into complexities. And, again, that massive overcutting is a factor that they have to deal with, as is the deep distrust developed over the course of those years.
It almost seems as if, maybe Scott Greeson, we can get you to comment on this, there's all this fresh air coming in because of Hurwitz and Maxim, but there's still, perhaps some concern and anxiety that's palpable.
Frankly, I don't want to overstate our concerns about MRC's practices. The point I'm trying to make is that they've got a good plan. They're a good company, as companies go. I just don't want people to hear that as they're perfect. We're a long ways from perfect. I think the ultimate importance of the Humboldt Redwood Company may be as an example of a company that can make a living without making a killing, without doing the killing, frankly, as an example of much better practices for some of the other companies that are operating in this region. Some of our fundamental concerns about the practices we endured under Hurwitz with Pacific Lumber had to do with the company's, almost its personality, the lack of transparency, the lack of accountability, their sort of belligerent attitude toward citizens, toward neighbors, and toward folks in the state agencies who are trying to keep a handle on their practices.
We're coming up on a break, and I do want to give out the phone number to listeners. Your thoughts about, a company that now is owned by the founders of the Gap, taking over the bankrupt Pacific Lumber Company. And that bankruptcy, by the way, certainly was related to the Headwaters Agreement. But we're going to talk about this and talk about it with you. Residents think the deal is a good one. Sustainable management is really at stake here for timberland of 210,000 acres, and your calls are welcome. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786. Lines are open and available to you. Again, it's 866-733-6786, or send an email to forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the bankrupt Pacific Lumber Company being taken over by the founders of the Gap and now under the control, really, of Mendocino Redwood Company. Those of you with long memories who remember the years under Charles Hurwitz, remember that there was a great deal of Sturm und Drang, to put it mildly. I was just saying to Sandy Dean, I wonder what Judy Berry would think of all this. And you got to think that this really, by comparison to the past, looks awfully good. May hear from some listeners in terms of questions and comments and, for that matter, concerns that you may have. But we're talking with Sandy Dean, who chairs the Mendocino Redwood Company and Humboldt Redwood Company, and with David Simpson, who is project coordinator of the community forestry team up in Humboldt County, and also with Scott Greeson, who is executive director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. We're going to go to your calls, and let's do that without tarrying. John, you're first up. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Wonder if your guests would comment on what they see as the role of the railroad, which has been inactive for some years, but which, of course, played a pivotal role in the timber in the last century and going forward. Do they see a role for it as opposed to the trucking that the logging otherwise requires? Thank you.
Yeah, all right. Scott Greeson?
The North Coast Rail Authority and the Northwest Pacific Rail line have been closed for more than a decade now, and it's going to take something approaching $1 billion to put the railroad back together in the Middle Fork of the Eel River. We think that's a bad idea and probably not worth it, just in strict economic terms, but certainly on it and on the environmental front. It seems to us a very, very bad deal, which, frankly, is being kind of run under the radar.
You got a comment from...
we don't think it's a good idea or that it would really help.
And David Simpson, agree on that?
I pretty much agree on that. The impacts, you know, the Middle Fork of the Eel is so unstable that putting a railroad, a dependable rail bed on that route is almost impossible. It's a huge expense. It would be great if we could have the savings. It would be a wonderful thing if we have the fuel savings, the shipping costs, but it seems undoable. Perhaps there's some localized log movements that could be made possible by rail within Humboldt County, but they would be, only provide small gains.
Let me go to some more calls here. And Rick, join us. You're on the air, Rick. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a longtime aficionado of the North Coast and the Redwood, the history of Redwood cutting and preservation up there. And anybody with a memory like mine knows that Pacific Lumber Company used to be, before Charles Hurwitz took it over, was a very reputable company with sustainable yield practices that had a very good relationship with the Save the Redwoods League in terms of setting timber aside for park purposes. But it was taken over in a hostile takeover, and I believe that was because they went public. They put their stock on the market. Is that true? And if that is true, how would the new owners, Mendocino, be thinking about preventing such a hostile takeover in the future? Because there's going to be robber barons out there, particularly from the state of Texas, waiting to see if you fail and looking at this as a get-rich-quick pot of gold that they could just liquidate.
Well, Sandy Dean, you just consummated this deal. You got to worry about hostile takeovers. You want to answer the caller's question?
So, I do think that ultimately the way Pacific Lumber Company came into the hands of Mr. Hurwitz was through hostile takeover because it was a public company. At Mendocino Redwood Company, we've been in business for 10 years. We're a private business. We have every intention to stay private, for as far out as we can see. The same would be true for Humboldt Redwood Company.
Let me thank the caller and go to more of your calls. Again, you can join us either by phone or email. The toll-free number for your calls is 866-733-6786. The email address, forum@kqed.org. I'm sorry, I hear your voice there, David Simpson or Scott
Greeson? This is Scott Greeson. Yeah. I just want to jump in on something that last caller raised. I think it's a really important point. Charles Hurwitz got away with his, I think it's fair to call them, crimes against nature and human communities here. I think largely as a result of the failure of our society to adequately restrain the greed of bad actors, and that if we're going to protect the future of relatively good operators, I think it means we've got to come up to snuff as a society. We've got to support our agencies and have effective government oversight. That's how we're going to prevent future tragedies like the one that Humboldt County is just emerging from.
I've got to support that statement. This is David Simpson. The hostile buyout was a creature of a wild economic era, wildly deregulated, ruled by, Drexel Burnham and Lambert. Michael Milken had a big hand in this project. It was a classic example of an unregulated marketplace gaining control over a localized resource and then having absolutely no limit to its demands on the land.
Well, there's more regulation now, but still many would like, indeed, to accelerate that process as well. But let me accelerate towards some more of our callers. Steve, join us. Hi.
Hey, top of the morning to you.
Good morning.
You guys are going in exactly the direction that I was inquiring about and have answered most of my questions. I have one question for you and your listeners, and that is I'd like to find out a little bit more about that original family that owned Pacific Lumber, because I remember this takeover, the dig regulation, the Reaganomics, the whole thing. And it was just a tragedy. But these people seemed, for business, in the business of chopping down trees, had a real respect for them. Can your speakers address that at all?
We're getting into the history here. Sandy Dean, can you help out here?
You know, I can give a little of the history. The company had been owned by a family by the name of the Murphys. And, in fact, there's still Murphys around in Humboldt County. And but the company had gone public, and the Murphys' share of the business had gotten to where, I think when the company was taken over, they only owned a few percent. So it had the company had been operated as a family business for far longer than it had been only family owned, and that was just the way that evolved. Again, we're, as a private company, you know, we're 100% owned essentially by one family, and you know, we intend to stay privately owned.
But this is, a commitment. People in San Francisco now certainly know the Fishers, and they're getting a lot of attention because of the Art Museum in Presidio. But this is a company that seems not only committed to good environmental practices, but committed to what I described as transgenerational. They want this to move along the lineage of the family, don't they?
Well, the way we've thought about it when we started Mendocino Redwood Company 10 years ago, and I like to refer back to that because, hey, in Humboldt County, we've got to, over time, through our actions, earn the trust of all the people who care about the forest and the community. In Mendocino County, where we've been working for 10 years, people can judge us not based on what we say, but based on what we do and what we've done. And we went into the forestry business in part with a view that as an investment, as something that the part of the model here is to be a successful business, that it's a very long horizon activity. And you know, for 10 years, we've done basically what we said we would do, which was balance stewardship in the business, and that's what we intend to do going forward with continuing with Mendocino Redwood Company and also with the new Humboldt Redwood Company.
And what about the company town?
Company town is a really important topic. So a whole bunch of us were in Scotia last week to work on the transition, and that continues on as we speak. And, in the town, there's about 300 homes. There's a small shopping center, a few stores and so on. And for people here in the Bay Area, the town is really unique. It's a throwback to a different era. It has wonderful people. Most of the people there have their livelihood in some way intertwined with the business. The whole bankruptcy is something that is out of the control and for some folks probably out of the understanding of the folks in the town. You know, what we hope is that the success of the Humboldt Redwood Company can allow the town to continue in the way of life that it offers for the people who are there. There was really a mix of emotion last week from anxiousness about employment, sadness for the passing of the Pacific Lumber Company era, hope for the future, optimism about, you know, a new beginning, and really poignant reminders of what makes the way of life there special.
And we go to more of your calls. David, join us.
Hi. I'm a property owner in the Mattole River Valley, and my property is surrounded by a large PL holding, which was, my understanding, largely held as kind of offset property. And I'm wondering, kind of moving forward, what's the fate of that property like that? Is there some kind of triage? Is offset holdings still kind of a concept that makes sense there? And what we can expect.
Can you help us here, Scott Greeson?
I think that's actually a question for David Simpson, Mattole landowner, and Sandy Dean.
Well, let's go to David Simpson on it then.
It's definitely a question for Sandy Dean, but I will say this, that all the properties that Pacific Lumber Company owns in the Mattole are Douglas fir properties. They do have some substantial old-growth holdings in Douglas fir, but at this state of the game, you know, because of the Douglas fir market is very weak. We have some time to contemplate these things. But Sandy would have to comment on, I think, you know, the specifics of their intention relative to the Mattole, and I half suspect they have not made a full determination yet. But Sandy, what do you...
Yeah, I was going to go to you last on this, Sandy, so let's do that here.
Yeah, so, hey, Bear Mattole, a very important area of the property. It is unique relative to most of the rest of the Pacific Lumber Company lands because it's the one area that, as David Simpson mentioned, is almost exclusively Douglas fir. And, we've got to get in and study that and think about it. You know, the economics of Douglas fir are very tough right now as a result of the housing situation. So I think, you know, in the short term, a status quo will be the word for Bear Mitol, where there won't be a lot of activity out there.
Sandy Dean, again, chair of Mendocino Redwood Company and Humboldt Redwood Company. And I thank David for the call, and we'll go to more of your calls. We'll go to Clara from Santa Clara. Good morning.
Good morning. I grew up in Humboldt County. I grew up about 5 minutes away from Scotia, and I have seen firsthand the destruction of the redwood forest through clear cutting, through PL. And I've heard Sandy Dean talk a lot about sustaining the redwood forest and the stewardship of the redwood forest. And I'm wondering how that fits in with sustaining the entire ecosystem of the redwood forest. There's a lot of plants and animals that are very unique to the redwood forest that don't exist anywhere else. And I was wondering what the company plans to do with, you know, things like the trillium or the banana slug or the spotted owl, those sorts of things. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, and we thank you for the call. And all vital for biodiversity. Talk about that in terms of your commitment, Sandy Dean, would you?
Well, in managing the forest in Mendocino County, again, where we have, you know, some years where we can look at what we've actually done, we've managed for a wide variety of ecological sensitivities. And by having a lower harvest rate, by relying on selection harvesting wherever we have well-stocked conifer forests, by, in particular, investing in sediment control to try and keep dirt out of the streams, we feel like we're really, and I guess I should tell people, you know, we've, in Mendocino Redwood Company's 10 years, through about $11 million of investment, we've held back 700,000 cubic yards of dirt from entering the streams that run through, the coastal streams that run through our property. You know, we think that by managing in a planned way at harvest rates that are less than growth, with our reliance on selection harvesting wherever we have well-stocked conifer stands, that we can still be a business that provides wood, which is an important product for our society, but at the same time really be improving the health of the forest, and that's what we intend to do up at Humboldt Redwood Company as well.
Can I bring you into this, Scott Greeson, particularly where some of these species of the caller expressed concern about?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think her concern is our fundamental concern as well, which is, you know, maintaining species and, like I said at the outset, the ecosystem processes, you know, the possibility of these ecosystems continuing into the future. And a lot of what Sandy's talking about is, in fact, what we've been pushing for across the region for the last several generations in terms of particularly MRC's work to control erosion. He's right to point to that. I think there are still some things we think that could be improved in terms of what we understand to be MRC's plans. Particularly, we'd like to see longer rotations. That's a place where, you know, over the long run, we really need as a society to continue to make an investment to put the forest back, basically, that has been liquidated over the last 20 years. One way that we can start to think about doing that as a society is to look at the need to put more of the carbon that we've dumped in the air back in the soil and back in the forest. And there may be a way to monetize some of the investments that MRC needs to make on that front.
And again, Scott Greeson is Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. Looking at some of your emails here, here's Michael who says, don't know if you already mentioned it, but David Harris's book, The Last Stand, is a great book that provides background to the situation in Humboldt County as well as the U.S. economy in general, and we have not mentioned it, and we thank you for that. Here's Zach who says, there's a shining example of sustainability right in front of this company. Eel River Brewing Company has taken over one of the old mills left behind in Scotia and are running it on biomass power. It seems this is so much more productive for the community than it's going to be difficult for this company to afford a sustainable living for that community. Sandy Dean, want to comment on that?
And tell me again, I missed the...
Talking about the Eel River Brewing Company operating on biomass.
Sure. Yeah,
as a good example for you to follow, I think, is what the caller is suggesting.
Yeah, yeah.
The emailer is suggesting it.
Yeah. We've met the folks at Eel River Brewing Company, and they do an awfully nice job there. They're essentially inhabiting a piece of an old mill building, and I think they do a good job.
Well, let me bring some more of our callers in from Mendocino. Norman, good morning.
Good morning, Norman Duvall. President of the Redwood Coast Watershed Alliance, and good morning, Sandy.
Norman, Nice to hear your voice.
Yes, it's been a long time. But we do have contact all the time, and I have two questions. One, please comment about climate change. You know that you've had major forestry fires and damage and losses in both Mendocino and Humboldt County. We contend that we've had almost a dehydration of the forest. You say you want to cut 50 million board feet a year. What concerns do you have about the possible continuing drought and the growth of the forest? Number two, do you plan to use Humboldt Bay and its facilities there for any kind of export? And thank you for taking the question.
Okay, and thank you for the call. Sandy Dean.
Nice to hear from Norman. He and I spent a lot of time together 10 years ago. On forest fires, this is really, the timing of all this is pretty amazing. Just as the court process for resolving the Pacific Lumber Company bankruptcy was reaching kind of the very top of a fevered pitch, we experienced an unprecedented lightning storm here in Northern California, where in Mendocino County, there were 600 lightning strikes in the county. And of those, about 60 occurred on the Mendocino Redwood Company property. And of the 60 lightning strikes that occurred, we wound up with 32 separate fires spread across our 230,000 acres. The last big fire on the Mendocino Redwood Company lands was in 1934. There's been modest fires occasionally, but normally things that could be dealt with pretty rapidly. In the case of this lightning storm and the 32 fires that it sparked on our property, ultimately, 23,000 acres were affected by fire, so almost 10% of what we have at Mendocino. Now, it's too soon to know for sure what will be the final impact of that. We hope that we'll find in the months ahead that maybe only a couple of thousand acres actually burned so hot that we lose all the trees, and that for the rest of it, it'll have been kind of a low-intensity burn on the floor of the forest, clearing out fuels without killing all the trees. And whatever happens here, we have a whole generation of foresters that will have learned from what was really a historic event. We hope we don't repeat it anytime soon.
Can I add something here?
Yeah, go ahead.
The kind of forestry that
Mendocino David Redwood, Simpson.
Yes, David Simpson, sorry. The kind of forestry that Mendocino Redwood Company practices, and frankly, I saw some early examples of it down at Big Creek Lumber Company in Santa Cruz in the early 80s, where Mendocino Redwood Company's president and chief forester, Mike Janai, cut his teeth, as it were. The kind of forestry they're practicing is potentially exactly what we need to do in terms of limiting the damage that occurs from wildfires. A well-spaced, healthy, vigorous growing stand has in it the capacity to resist crown fires, damaging fires. Low-intensity burns can only assist in the development of the stand. So the kind of forestry they're practicing that we'd like to see practiced, and that I believe Mendocino Redwood Company wants to practice, is potentially as good an antidote, is as good provides benefits in terms of resistance to damaging wildfire, as well as any kind of silvicultural regime that could be put in place. So that's a positive note.
Yeah. David Simpson, the caller, also brought up Humboldt Bay. You want to comment on that?
Humboldt Bay?
Yeah.
What was the question about Humboldt Bay? I don't quite remember.
Will they be using the port?
That's for Sandy's to determine.
I guess historically, I think that the port was used to export logs, and that's something that, I think sometimes causes concern for folks. It's too soon for us to say, historically, we have never exported, much wood out of Mendocino, and I'll be surprised if there's much change to that.
On we go to more calls from Oakland. Frank, join us. You're on Forum. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, guys. 18 years at PL at Mill B, the old growth mill. Poured a lot of Babbitt. Worked on all the steam stuff. Nepotism, that's my big thing. I'm not there. I don't intend on going back. But the plant store and a lot of sections of the office were multi-generational, people slacking that. And it only proved how much money PL was making because they could afford to keep the dead wood around.
Yeah, it's an interesting word of description, deadwood there. Sandy Dean, you want to come in?
I think the caller probably points out that the culture of Pacific Lumber Company had evolved from a family business that was really resource rich. And in being so resource rich, they probably were able to avoid making the tougher decisions that a lot of businesses have to make about employment practices. I can say that in establishing the workforce for Humboldt Redwood Company, we've taken a lot of effort to try and have a simple, objective process that would be fair to everyone, where folks basically had a chance to come in and meet with people from our existing business. And we then basically based on that and based on the determination of our needs, made a selection of who we wanted to offer positions to with the most objectivity as possible.
But this is a case, at least on the face of it, of a new business absorbing an old business, really. So some of the people certainly who were involved in the old business are going to continue.
Oh, sure.
In a significant and integral way. Yeah?
Well, you know, we've hired all of the workforce needs, essentially, from the existing Pacific Lumber Company workforce. But there will be new leadership. And there will be new policies and there'll be new goals for the business. And, you know, we think that the workforce will be able to adopt to that well.
Again, Sandy Dean here with us in studio, chair of the Mendocino Redwood Company and Humboldt Redwood Company. I thank Frank for his call. And we move on to Dee Dee. Morning, Dee Dee.
Good morning. I was wondering what restoration's happening for the decades of clear cut that went on?
Sandy Dean?
Well, clear cutting, once it occurs, you have to live with the consequences of that for a while. For us, you know, what we really do is once we have well-stocked conifer stands, which following a clear cut can take 40 to 50 years to begin to be in that position, is to use selective logging. So for stands that were clear cut last year, hey, the recovery takes a long time. But, you know, we will move to the same policies that we use at Mendocino Redwood Company, which is where we have well-stocked conifer stands, to only selectively log. And if you were to go look at one of our selective, you know, logging plans, what you'd see is a forest that's intact, but with some light coming to the forest floors and some stumps that would be visible. But all of the other attributes of the forest are still there. And, you know, that's how we'll manage well-stocked conifer stands. In the case of clear cuts that happened recently, it will just take a while for us to get there.
You want to comment on concerns about restoration, David Simpson?
Well, I think there's in some of the country where Humboldt Redwood Company is going to have to operate, there are some significant restoration needs. All of these watersheds have been impacted pretty heavily by intensive logging and road building. The one thing that Pacific Lumber Company under Hurwitz did actually was try to institute a relatively decent road maintenance and road improvement program, and I'm sure that Mendocino Redwood Company is going to go them one further. But nonetheless, restoration is a huge job to do, and in fact, as Scott says, viewing forestry as restorative forestry or as restoration forestry is a healthy way to look at it.
You just said one of the first positive things I've heard in a long time about Maxim and their role in this.
Yeah.
Scott Greeson, want to get you in on this?
Yeah, I think the last couple of callers have raised some really important questions, and you know the idea of maintaining an ecosystem while doing forestry is really the central idea here. And the only way we're going to get there is to start doing it today. You know, it means critically that there has to be new leadership at this company, and we're really happy to hear that the Mendocino Redwood Company has brought new leadership to what's left of Pacific Lumber. But I want to leave with the last thought that climate change raises the possibility of confounding all of our hopes, and it's something we need to be very careful about and very aware of, that we don't base our plans for the future on premises that may no longer apply.
We need
to be careful.
Thank Dee Dee for her call, and let's bring Sandy on. Sandy, good morning.
Good morning. I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about the role of independent third-party certification, such as Forest Stewardship Council certification, in verifying some of the environmental claims that you're making and having that.
Yeah, Sandy Dean.
So that's a great question. When we started Mendocino Redwood Company 10 years ago, we knew that we wanted to make a very different kind of forest products company. We knew we wanted to be a good steward of the land. The question is, you know, how to find a model for what that really meant. And for us, very quickly, we committed ourselves to the pursuit of Forest Stewardship Council certification. Forest Stewardship Council is a group founded in the early 90s with the support of most of the big national environmental groups and many smaller regional and local environmental groups. It is a system of standards that are intended to capture exemplary forestry.
And that, sustainable forestry.
Exemplary and sustainable forestry that is assessed and validated by an independent third party in the woods. And so, you know, different regions have different standards. The standards are quite detailed and involved. They start with the principles and criteria and work down to a whole bunch of very specific things. And typically the certification is committed, reviewed out in the woods by a team of experts who assess, you know, has the company been able to meet the very high standards of the Forest Stewardship Council. And we will pursue, we are Forest Stewardship Council certified at Mendocino Redwood Company and have been for almost 8 years, and we will immediately begin the process of seeking Forest Stewardship Council certification for Humboldt Redwood Company.
Well, let me thank the caller and thank our guests, because we are coming to the end of the hour, with the hope that sustainable forestry will be the future, and that the future will certainly change in radical ways, because, you know, I can remember the demonizing of Maxim, some of it deservedly so, and I want to thank our guest, Sandy Dean, again, as chair of the Mendocino Redwood Company and Humboldt Redwood Company. David Simpson is project coordinator of the Community Forestry Team, and Scott Greeson is executive director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. Thanks to you, our listeners. We would not be here without you, and are appreciative of your being with us here every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. With an hour repeated in the evening, 10 to 11. And an hour is coming up, another hour form. We're going to talk about MoveOn.org, which is celebrating its 10th anniversary, and just what kind of force it continues to have politically and in other ways. I hope you'll join us for that hour. Remind you, you can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, to our producers, Judy Campbell and Kevin Guillory, to our engineer, Danny Bringer, to our executive producer, Raul Ramirez. Again, thanks to you. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.